And there's all these different quotes from Sully from Uncharted. He said, life isn't about, it's about how you play with the hand you're dealt. And as far as just, oh, it's just a game, or oh, it's just this, it's like, that is still really valuable advice.
This is the Living Numbers Podcast, and I am your host, Tony Rambles. This is the show where everyone's interesting if you ask the right questions. Now, before we start, I have four appeals, 20 seconds, ready, set, timing. Number one, rate, review, 5 stars, wherever you listen to podcasts, wherever. Number two, follow me on IG and TikTok at the Living Numbers Podcast. Number three, you can support the vision by purchasing merch from the Living Numbers Pod Shop on Etsy. And number four, subscribe on Apple and Spotify for the exclusive behind-the-scenes episodes. Like me and Liam, we just talked about a ton of stuff, but you can only get that stuff if you subscribe. And I'm sure we'll have a great conversation afterwards once we finish this whole thing. So, of course, when we have somebody on for the first time, they have to get an elaborate intro. Now, Liam has not heard this intro, so definitely correct me afterwards because I'm sure I'll get something wrong. All right, here we go. Hailing from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, our guest earned his MBA from the University of Pittsburgh. Go Panthers. Shout out to Larry Fitzgerald. Our guest is the corporate partnerships manager for Knights Esports Group in Pittsburgh. So hometown kid doing hometown stuff. Since partnering with the Pittsburgh Steelers, ever heard of them? Recording artist Wiz Khalifa, one of my favorites in college, and Evgeny Malkin of the Pittsburgh Penguins, he's become the leading authority on competitive gaming. He is the man. This guy has carved a very great jack-o'-lantern in his day. He's a massive soccer fan, and he's clearly a gamer on and off the sticks. I present the Liam Fun Buns Brown. Say hello to the people.
Hello, everybody. That was a very, I like that, a very elaborate intro. That was awesome.
Awesome. Okay, before we start, where do fun buns come from? What is that?
You know, I've always been a fan. I've always been a fan of like Chinese food and the pork buns. That's always just my thing. That's how you can really judge the authenticity and whether or not that restaurant's really worth your time. So that's where it came from.
So I guess, you know, with a guy who has this business in esports, we got to start with actual gaming, because I'm sure you grew up a gamer as well as I did. So we're about to have a lot of fun here. Good. So our first number is a free 99, okay? Also known as free, not paying any money. Because that's how much this game called Valorant costs. It's a free-to-play game where you can actually spend money if you want to get extra stuff. But the people who play, they know. If you know, you know, right? So playing video games was a huge thing in my home from very, very early on. My dad and my uncles played games. I remember mostly we started off with the football games. Yes. And then games like WCW versus NWO was a massive hit. A lot of wrestling games. By the time SmackDown came around, we were playing the games. We had kicked them off the sticks. So, like, how did your gaming journey start? Like, what console was it? What games were there?
Yeah, that's a great first question. And that was around the time when I was in about second grade. It was a PlayStation. It was this PlayStation 2, and my dad and I would play Tekken. And yeah, we would play Tekken. Ooh, yeah. No, we would play Tekken.
Which
and we
one?
Would play I can't remember, man, because here's the thing. We would play Tekken and we would play Madden. And we played more Madden because my mom would let us play Madden. She didn't like how much we were fighting on Tekken. Right.
So if we're talking PlayStation 2, that was probably like
Madden. It was like Madden. I think it was Tekken Madden 06. 3? Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Madden 06.
Yeah. And.
Okay, yeah, keep going.
We started there, and then I would talk. I had this one classmate named Alan, and him and I, we would trade video games in the beginning of the day when we came to class. And I would always get all kinds of cool mech and kind of anime-based games from him. So he was, I learned a lot more about Gundam and from him because he had this game that I really, really liked called, the Dynasty Warriors 2 Gundam.
Yeah.
And that was so much fun because it was just you against like hordes of enemies. And that's where I found a lot of single player campaign fun. And then I went on from there going into a lot more different PlayStation titles from Star Wars The Force Unleashed. That was probably one of my most favorite ones, right? Here's the thing. I went to the exchange the other day and I bought a copy for my Xbox because it's one of the few games that you can still play on Xbox One and Xbox 360 because it's cross-compatible. But that's where I laid the foundation for a lot of my gaming in elementary school and then in earlier middle school with different Wii titles such as Super Smash Bros. Brawl and Mario Kart because they were so multiplayer friendly and family friendly too. So, well, with the Super Smash Brothers, I mean, it's legend. Pretty much family friendly. Yeah. And that's where I found how strategy and skill were a huge part. And then that's when I would look up the different competitions of people in the professional space playing because with a lot of people who play together in different kinds of gaming, this is kind of what led me to it, is that since the barrier to entry is low, anybody is able to game, and everyone's going to be a little curious about what the pros are doing, right? So when you look at Evo, right, and which is the big one of the larger fighting game conventions, and you look at what some of these guys are doing in the professional Super Smash Brothers stage, it's insane. I didn't know you can move characters that fast, right? Defensively or offensively. I barely know how to do the dodge properly, and I just see them just whip around each other, right? So that a lot of the gaming in PlayStation 2 with my dad and some of my friends and like when I was younger, that's what laid the foundation for a lot of gaming for me. I'm curious to know, like with SmackDown and SmackDown versus Raw, like who did you usually try to play as? I would always just play as The Rock because I was never the biggest wrestling fan because my family and I, we watched strongman and bodybuilding and UFC as our big forms of sports entertainment. We never really watched too much wrestling because I was in. Now, I'm not saying this to offend any of your viewers, but I was put in wrestling. So when I was in a singlet and my headgear, and then I'd see people who'd step into the ring and they would be like throwing chairs at each other and barbed wire. And I was like this is nothing.
That's not wrestling.
I was like, this is nothing like I'm doing. So I'm kind of scared of this, but I'm curious, like what characters you played it with and how was it trying to boot your parents off of it? Like your dad, your uncle, that's very interesting. I like that.
So early on, because clearly I'm a little bit older than you are, it was Super Nintendo. So I remember like the earliest we could only watch, right? Because you're too young at the time. All the older people are playing. And so it was Street Fighter 2 on Super Nintendo. Those are like the earliest memories of like, okay, those are video games. Like that's kind of cool. But for me, I think it changed it was the Nintendo 64 is my favorite system. The Nintendo 64, the first PlayStation, because we would play a lot like you're saying, it was those games that everybody could play. So it was the wrestling games, you know. It was the WCW versus NWO. It was the WrestleMania 2000. It was Mario Party, GoldenEye.
Yes.
Mario Golf was even... And so it was Blockbuster back then too.
Yeah.
So you could rent games, you keep it for a week, and then you send it back. So I got a funny story. SmackDown, we got from Blockbuster. We rented it, right, for a week.
Awesome.
We loved it so much, we weren't going to give it back. And I say we, it was me, my brother, my cousin Derek. Daniel played games, but he wasn't locked in like me, Troy, and Derek. Like, we was like gamers. And then my Uncle Ia, Uncle Ouija, and then my dad. Like, we, us six, like, we would game all night until the morning time. So we weren't going to give the SmackDown back. My mom actually ended up buying the SmackDown game for us.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
So
that's awesome.
So we returned the other one. Yeah.
She's like, I'd rather pay all about, full price. Just, I don't want the late fee. Just do the thing.
Yes. So Blockbuster was such a great help. And then after that came like the demo discs and stuff that came with those magazines. Because you could try, like you talked about with your friend, you could try a whole bunch of different kinds of games. Yes. And you didn't have to like lock yourself into paying for, you know, 40. I don't remember how much games cost because I wasn't paying for them. So I think they were like 30 or 40 bucks back then.
Yeah, they were 30 or 40 bucks back then. And now it's very easy to spend like upwards of 70 on the base level of the game without DLCs or pre-ordering and stuff like that. Then when you factor in the microtransactions and skin costs, you know, you were just referencing Valorant.
Oh my gosh.
The term a lot of people use is freemium, right? So freemium meaning you can enjoy the base level game, but then in order to take on some of the additional skins and stuff that enhance the overall experience, like those charges are going to add up, right? It's one of the biggest money makers for CSGO, League of Legends. I mean, the list goes on. Like, it's just, even though I just named two, but
I didn't even mention sports games, you know, growing up in Detroit. Madden 04, Madden 05.
Yes.
Crazy.
Yes. If we look at culture, you know, the Madden games, FIFA games, all the traditional sports games, right? They
NBA Live
were
at that point.
Yeah. NBA 2K, one of the NBA 2K and Madden probably have the larger traditional sports and esports synchronicity, right? You've got the esports and the professional side of those is there's a lot more money in those. And what I found from this is anecdotal evidence, right? When I was in high school, that's when gaming really took on gaming really took on a mainstream approach to entertainment outside of school, outside of sports, right? And when I was in college, anime and gaming really came together and comic books really came together as the mainstream form of entertainment. But it was those entry-level traditional sports games of FIFA and Madden, at least when I was in high school, that, you know, you had all the popular kids and the athletic kids playing those and talking about those in class. So then a lot of other students were talking about, you know, the Dragon Ball Z games in class. They were talking about
too.
Yeah, they were they were talking about games where it doesn't have the biggest mainstream appeal, right? But sure, people still play it, right? And with the advent of like Nintendo DSs and PS and PSPs, or wait, PlayStation? What was the portable?
Yeah, that's it.
It was PSP, right? God, that was so long ago. But,
man.
Oh my gosh, I still remember the carrying cases. Like, you'd whip
Game
it.
Game Boy Advance.
The Game Boy Advance. Then I would play Nintendo DS in the beginning of class. Screw talking about phones as a source of entertainment in the classrooms. Nintendo DSs, we would play it in class with the volume turned down and the brightness turned down when we were done our assignments, and we would just be like this, and we'd have it folded up to like the 90 degrees, and we'd just be like this.
Yep.
You know, so like,
we're good.
And those kinds of that make all that really accessible gaming entertainment really was able to bring forth just gaming as a mainstream form of entertainment to everybody. Right. Even now, everybody games. I just recently saw a statistic about people above the age of 50 are some of the most active gamers on mobile, on mobile devices. And also, when you look at these large single-player narrative-driven games such as Elder Scrolls Skyrim, you know, the when you have older seniors playing that game, they're going to be the ones that are doing the collectible side quests where you collect different books on behalf of this merchant, or they're buying a house and filling up the bookshelves and reading the books, and they're just like staring at the screen and reading for like hours on end, and they're engaging with all those smaller things in detail oriented in the game, you know. So our conversation kind of dipped into why it's gaming's a lot more mainstream now, and geekdom is and fandom is really out there right now. So I don't want to accelerate this too far just so early.
Yeah, there are games for everyone. Like, my wife's not a gamer, but I look up and she's like on The Sims, you know. She's got family going, yes. And they got lives, and you know, so this kind of, if you want to game, if you're interested, there's definitely something that you can find. And you probably feel the same way. Like, over time, your taste in games has changed, you know. Mm-hmm. For me, sports games are always going to be a part of it, because, you know, I'm a sports guy, you know, so it's always cool to see the new 2K come out, and to a lesser degree, the new Madden, because they've been so bad for so long. But a friend of mine introduced me to, it was Skyrim, and I was like, well, I mean, I would be up, and I think I was like maybe 22 when Skyrim came out, because I was working at Forever 21, my boy Chaz. He's like, you have to get this game. You have to. And so we actually, this is also very funny, we, because we played the game so much, we had like a code language at work that we would use based on the cities.
Okay. So what was Windhelm? What was Windhelm at work? Is that just like the one register over there?
So unfortunately, we were judging the look of women that came in.
No, you're like, yo, she's totally a Mark Karth, and he's just like, that's Cap. That's Cap.
I mean, as bad as this sounds, right? We can't go, dang, she fine. Like, you can't do that at the register. It's but tough. You can go, Riften? You know, is this a, you know, is this some, it's exactly, it's like, nah, that's more of a Markarth, and nobody knows what we're talking about. But when you're in your early 20s, you're two guys, single men, working at Forever 21, you know, you got to find a way to keep yourself occupied, right? So that's, you know, people might say whatever, but, you know, we all look around and whatever. So, but it's funny how games like start to have like these crossover appeals, you know? So, wow. All right. Last thing, like on, I guess, this part of gaming, what would you say is like your favorite? I don't know about favorite, because there's a ton of games, but I would say most influential game for you, as well as influential console.
I would say most influential console for sure was Xbox 360, because when I was able to engage with that, first off, my favorite thing about Xbox controllers is the fact that they fill your hand up a little bit more than PlayStation or now a Nintendo Switch controller, right? And I would never rage, but I'd be okay with feeling frustrated and just be like, and kind of pressing my thumbs like right here. You know, I'd be like, man, you know, so that Xbox 360 for sure was where I found a lot of playtime. And I think that I was able to take part in so many different titles that so many other people could relate to as well. Right. I didn't get an Xbox 360 until relatively later in the game. And it was still just so much fun. And as far as a title that I think was the most influential, I think the most influential one for me was the Warhammer 40K Space Marine. Now, if you know, do you know a little bit about the Warhammer? I mean, about Warhammer 40K lore at all?
No, not at all. I know
it is niche. I will tell you, it is niche, right? So it is, because it pulls together, first off, it is such an expansive world. And obviously, you know, if we were to talk about this, we would be here for like 4 hours, which I'm completely okay with. But it's now because it was influential upon me because one, it opened me up to a completely new brand of storytelling. And it was because it was such a different lore for me. And I just kind of like hopped in. And also the finishing moves in that and how you regain health back is by enacting these brutal finishers on your enemies, right? And that was so interesting to me because I had never been one for ultra violent games, right? Skyrim has an M rating, but the blood textures, I mean, you understand this, like the blood textures when you first start the game are like, it looks like cubes, right? It's just like, you don't even see it, right? It's more adult because of the themes. But this was an M-rated game that was rated M because of the brutality of it. And I knew about Mortal Kombat, but I never played Mortal Kombat, right? It didn't set me down this dark path of like always looking for like the most brutal games. Like I wanted to play the Saw games after this, right? It was very different for me. And that encouraged me to explore all kinds of different single player narratives as well as get into and explore different sources of entertainment besides the normal ones, which I had at that time, which was Naruto, you know, which was a lot more of Naruto and Star Wars really were my main source of entertainment besides like gaming, because those were two really expansive worlds, right? Naruto has been around for literally decades and Star Wars, there was constantly, this was at the time where there was still a lot of books from Legends, like Star Wars Legends being brought up, right? So I definitely say Space Marine and Xbox 360. And in a close second is probably Skyrim, just because you can, first off, there's a reason that game's been re-released for 10 years for so many different times. And also there's still, like, I still play it because I have an Xbox One S. I don't have an Xbox Series X, but this with this console, I'm still able to download mods. Right. So I downloaded a bunch of and I'm boring with my mods. They're texture mods. They immerse me in the experience and better lighting. Right. It'll still crash the game, though. I will let you know it still crashes the game because I've got way more trees and vegetation in the game now. Right. And it's nothing crazy. I didn't do the replace every dragon with Thomas the Tank Engine. I didn't do that or Randy Savage. It wasn't really interesting to me. But those two games. What about you? What do you think?
The Nintendo 64 just takes me back to a totally different time where it was all about hanging out with people and playing video games. So it takes me back to this, you know, this time period where I'm with my cousins, you know, I'm with my friends, I'm with my brothers, and I'm with my uncles, and we're just playing video games. And a lot of that was, like I said before, the wrestling games. And then like stuff like a GoldenEye or Mario Party. So like those kind of team games, you know, competition games. Super Smash Brothers. Oh my goodness. We spent so much time playing Super Smash Brothers. The first one.
Crazy. Yeah.
Yes. The first one. Yes.
The first one. You were alive for that? No, I'm just
kidding. Oh, that's
No. Okay.
I will go. This is not off the beaten path, but kind of like what you said. I could easily use Skyrim here, but I'll say The Last of Us kind of showed me this narrative driven. And I kind of started playing Uncharted and The Last of Us in the same kind of time.
Your heart. Ugh.
Yeah. So my guy, my same friend, Chaz, who was putting me on to all these different games because I could sign in to his PlayStation 3 account, download the games, and then, you know, I would have them on my console. So he kind of introduced me to like these narrative driven games, like you said, like these one player games that you can just get immersed in, and they feel like movies or TV series. Like they really grab you and you care about these characters. And so those games really kind of changed how I game. It's kind of reverted back now to, I just really just play sports games because I don't want all of the gore and stuff. So I got The Last of Us 2 downstairs, and it's just kind of sitting there because I already know what that's going to look like.
That, yo, Last of Us 2 is rough.
But I need the story.
the story's rough too, because I can't go golfing anymore because of that. Spoilers. For all your viewers at home, they'll know what I'm talking about. I think that with the Uncharted, another untold medium of gaming communication when I was younger was twofold. Game Informer magazine, right? Which I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they're as big as they used to be, but I, for a year, one of my birthday presents was getting their monthly magazines for an entire year. Yeah. And it was fantastic. But another form, which was on cable TV, I don't know if anybody remembers this, G4 TV.
G4?
Yeah, G4. And okay, so you remember X-Play. I would always be watching X-Play because, one, I would watch X-Play and I would watch Ninja Warrior. And then it came out with American Ninja Warrior, and it just didn't feel the same because so here's the thing, diversion. The old Ninja Warrior, it was fun, right? Because you had just teenagers, they're still cosplaying as a random character, and they're like, you know what? I'm gonna go out and I'm gonna have fun, and I'm gonna run the course dressed up as, you know, I'm gonna dress up as a very impractical or just a really impractical character to be dressed up as. They're dressed up as like Boa Hancock from One Piece, and they've got like the snake wrapped around her, and she's also got the snake staff. It's just like, that's not going to help you at all. Anyway, so, but yeah, I used to watch that all the time because it was fun. And then I used to watch X-Play because they had everything. They had the gaming reviews, talking about mm-hmm. future releases, in a very entertaining. Now you look back, it's a little cringy. You know, it's these silly sketches, right? To talk about the next thing in the episode, but still, that was before everybody was using IGN's YouTube channel to get all their gaming news, before they were using outside Xbox to get their gaming reviews, right? That's before a lot of that gaming media was in the mainstream, and mm-hmm. it really helped me stay up to date about something and further my interest in that topic, and also learn about all the cool thing and exciting things, and constantly have something to go to my friends at school with to talk about something cool that's happening, right? Just like when you're kids, you would talk about the next episode of SpongeBob, or I don't even know, is SpongeBob even around anymore?
Dragon Ball Z.
Exactly. It's like, wait,
Yu-Gi-Oh or Pokemon or Saturday morning cartoons.
Yeah, it's like I stayed up extra late on Adult Swim to watch this, right? Just like that. So, you know, as far as a TV show that really extended my interest into gaming and esports overall, G4, the channel G4, and specifically X-Play. Whew, man. You know, that's where I learned a lot about Uncharted, man. You know, they had, I remember when X-Play came out with the This Year in Game mega trailer back in 2014. I still watch it. And there's all these different quotes from Sully from Uncharted. He said, life isn't about, it's about how you play with the hand you're dealt. And as far as just, oh, it's just a game, or oh, it's just this, it's like, that is still really valuable advice, you know, and it's just, so much nostalgia there. Like, I had to, when you started talking about Uncharted, I had to just be like,
man, I started playing that game. I was like, what? Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. You know, we'll make sure I actually put a note. Once this is over, we're going to come back to this discussion. Cause I'm like,
yes, I'll write it down.
I got to put a pin in this. Okay. All right. It's funny that you talked about Sully kind of giving that advice. Because the next thing that we're going to talk about is leadership, which you being, basically the leader of, you know, corporate sponsorship for your esports company, you have to be able to, you know, run a team and connect with these different partners. So we're going to talk about the business side. But first, I have to introduce our next number, which is 8.4 million views. So if you Google, I think it was leadership skills, not leadership skills. If you YouTube search leadership skills. The video that will come up, Simon something, is a TED Talk. It's got 8.4 million views, and that is the most. So, leadership, communication, building relationships, it sounds like this was something that's kind of been in your DNA from the very beginning. So, like, how did you kind of discover yourself as a leader? Like, did that start in elementary school or middle school or later on?
I think from a leadership standpoint, that some of those, what you could talk about as far as leadership skills and and that kind of thing, I think that could have started as far as recess in, I want to say, like, fourth or fifth grade, because I was the one, while we were a group of, we were the group of kids that were out in a different part of the playground doing our own thing, and all of the other kids were, who were more attracted to playing, you know, basketball with each other or being on the playground, we were out in the middle of the field doing, using our imagination to construct these different realities based off of shows like Ben 10 and Naruto and stuff like that, right? And I would always lay the groundwork for us to, first off, be comfortable with doing such a thing when everyone was like,
D&D kind
of. Exactly. When in live action role playing and just engaging in something that.
So you're a dungeon master.
In a way, I do not have the time to actually do D&D, nor do I have the time to write the actual story. I can't. But in a way, yes. And I was the part of the friend group that kept us together, and two, made us all feel comfortable and secure from the onlookers who were like, what are you guys doing? Like, that's weird. You're weird for doing this, because it's this or it's that, right? And then when I started to find other characteristics of leadership was in when I was a camp counselor, and all of my other coworkers who were dead set on getting by and just going by the book of, okay, I'm just going to make sure these kids don't eat each other alive. Instead of providing a direction for each of them to go in every day and to get the most out of this thing that they want to be a part of, right? So I was the one challenging what activities we were going to do today and trying to fit as much into that itinerary as possible. And all of my coworkers who were in it for just kind of here, they were like, okay, I will do that thing that you just said that the kids are going to like. Okay, let's do it. And I was able to get us together and create obstacle courses for the kids when we had nothing planned for that day. I was the one who would create games for more of the kids when we were just going to the pool and we were just going to let them run free, right? And then that progressed into, you know, into the job space and kind of in my university with gaming and esports. And we'll touch on this later, but when COVID hit and when I was in my internship at that time was with a tech company called CDWG. And what they did was they staffed every college or university or office or company with whatever you need, office chairs, desks, computers, headsets, printers, all of that kind of thing. And what they were doing was during COVID, they were making a big push into the esports category, and they were doing a lot of the messaging for Lenovo's Legion line of gaming equipment. And that's where I found esports as an avenue of, wow, this is something that's awesome. This is really cool. And I went into it with, I need to understand the market. I need to understand how to talk to these head buyers at each of the departments and build these relationships, because I knew that my role in it was temporary. My official role was the campus intern, and I was going to get replaced the next year or because I was in my senior year. And when I found gaming, I was just looking at all the different gaming clubs we had on campus. I had to move heaven and earth to find the right contact for each of these clubs. Then I found them. I put them all on an email chain together, and I was like, "Hey, like, let's do something. Let's learn about each other. Let's set up these gaming events and opportunities, because it was everybody during that time at the university was very laissez faire about like what they were going to do. It's just like, I'll just do whatever is present or whatever the plan is, because there wasn't really any sources of entertainment and events at the university because you weren't allowed to, because you can't have so many people in one space at one time. Right. Everyone, right. There's restrictions. There's all these different things. So I was like, well, esports is virtual. All these games we already play are virtual. This was at the height of Among Us being popular. I was like, let's get some Among Us like games. With different streamers and stuff like that. It was very, very popular. It wasn't interesting. I don't know. It was it meme worthy. Yes. So with the gaming clubs, I was also going back and forth with the head of esports at one of our branch campuses. I went to University of Pittsburgh, and the Greensburg campus had a full esports team, and was started by the head of the computer lab. Right, this is a guy who was his passion. His sister had set up the esports program at another university, and they had built out, you know, a big arena for it and all this, right? So I was very motivated to get started because, one, I was very interested in this category. Two, there was nothing else to do, and three, I wanted to. I have always enjoyed bringing people together with common interests to achieve even greater goals of themselves or whatever their interest is, right? So that is where I kind of peaked out of my leadership in school and education environments, and it led me to go into. I mean, I still do kind of manage the Discord for University of Pittsburgh Gaming, but because I just make sure there's no spam in there, and I have elevated to have the pleasure of being with the Knights and having a leadership role here, where it's extended to, first off, I'm based here in the city. So whenever we do stuff with the Steelers, Pirates, or Wiz Khalifa and his Taylor gang, whenever Wiz is in town, whenever we do in-person activations, or when we were just recently at the auto show, I'm there on the ground helping dictate.
So great.
Yeah, I've worked in live events and things of that nature and volunteering since I was around 13 or 14 with the YMCA, just because it was fun, right? It was something constructive, and I was getting volunteering experience for college, right? And it just became a passion. So whenever I'm down on the ground, I never try to be just the guy that's there to be there because he was told to be there. I am always trying to be efficient with what band power was going where, what labor can be saved from this so we can divert it there. And that's how a lot of that has extended here. When we've just recently brought on some new staff in my section, like the partnerships department, and I've had to train them in certain different areas where my skill sets lie. And we were just talking about creating the relatability for someone that you're looking to lead or for you, you know, being in the classroom, that's hey, maybe I'm gonna let them make this silly TikTok right now. Maybe I'll go in and I'll be a part of it in a little bit, but that creates that relatability so that we're able to understand each other better. And it's no different in the office with some of the stuff that I'm doing, right?
So talking about being in the office and the relatability and the stuff that we talked about beforehand, what do you think are some important traits, like important qualities to be in the leader? I guess just things that you feel like, based on your experience, have gotten you the furthest.
The first is being willing to ask questions when you don't understand something and refusing to be the person who doesn't understand what is being discussed. Because it's better to look silly or look like you're at a disadvantage in that moment, rather than take on that insecurity of knowledge with you to in the future, whether it's, oh, I didn't understand that subject that you were talking about. I didn't understand your current timeline of product releases. Can you go into this? You stated some things that were conflicting with information that I had been given. Can we go a little bit more in depth here? And the only constriction that you're really going to have when those questions are brought up is oh, well, one, oh, you're going to feel a little bit silly for asking. And number two, oh, well, I don't really have time for it right now. Can we discuss it later? And then you just discuss it at the end or discuss it at a different time.
Follow up.
So I think being willing to ask questions when you are uncertain is one of the first things that any leader or someone trying to have a leadership role needs to have. Yeah, that's probably number one. What's your number one?
I think being a good communicator is really, because once there's no communication, now people are left up to, they guess, you know, and they make stuff up or they start to make up whatever it is that they want to do. So even if you do have a vision and it's a great vision, or you have a great plan, okay, if you're not able to communicate that effectively to your team, it doesn't mean anything, right? Because nobody knows where we're going. And then I think oftentimes, even if the plan stinks or if the results are bad, at least people know and they understand where we stand. And from there, you can start to plan whatever's next, how to get better, or some people planning their escape, you know? So if you don't have the communication, like, none of whatever you're trying to do is going to work. So for me, being a good communicator, being somebody that's always, I would say willing to do the dirty work. And I mean that more in the sense of, like, you have somebody on your team that's underperforming. Instead of firing them, like, how involved are you going to get in training that person and helping them to get better? You know, so that's what I look at as the dirty work, you know, being willing to do those kind of things with people, because that also, like we talked about before, that's going to build trust. That's going to build buy-in, because people feel like you're there with them. Now, as a leader, there always has to be a point where you're delegating tasks and you can't be doing everything. But sometimes, like, some things can't be delegated. Like, when things when it's hitting the fan, like, you got to step in and you got to make sure things happen, you know? So,
I think
those are a couple of things that come to mind at first.
Yeah, I think that's, you offer a lot of really good insight as far as, I keep going back to this, being relatable as a leader to the people that you're trying to make their jobs easier and lead them in, like, a good direction. You know, my superiors over at the Knights are only people that are willing to do the dirty work with you. They're the ones that are going to stay up late with you in those long coding binges, those long coding sessions. They're going to stay with you to do that research into how to solve this problem that we're currently facing later into the night. I've many a times held longer conversations outside of office hours and met with them on weekends just to further problem solve things that have been irking me, right? And James O'Connor, who is our founder and our CEO, he constantly will show us the interview with Michael Jordan where he was talking about, he's like, yeah, you know, they always talked about me. They might have talked about me as a tyrant or whatever, but I was always willing to stay at practice with them. I would never push them to do things I would never do as a leader or as someone who was down on the ground with them. And, you know, the one thing that really keeps me, I think, energized is the fact that all of my upper leadership at the Knights is people of that same mentality, right? And I think we're full of really, really inspiring leaders at my organization that perfectly encapsulate, like, what you were talking about. Yeah.
I think as a leader, it's important to, like, once you hire people, train them and then let them do their jobs. Like, I don't understand how, if you're in a position where you're in charge of a lot of stuff, how you have time to micromanage people. Because, nobody likes being micromanaged. Now, some people, I would say, need a little bit more structure than others. Like, some people, you can give them no structure, like yourself, Liam, and you go, okay, it's up to you. Go ahead and make it happen. Like, I trust you. And then you will go out and do something that they probably could not have put together themselves. And then other people, they're like, okay, give me 1 through 10, and I'm going to make sure 1 through 10 is done, like, as best as it can be. You know, so you have to know your people. But I believe in, and I do it with my kids, you know, in class. Yeah. All right, this is what we're doing. This is how you do it. And honestly, my directions are not like always, if we need 10 steps, I'm going to give you 5. But I'm going to make those 5 vague enough to where you have room to put your own spin on it, you know, or put yourself into it, your personality into it. And that works because of what I teach. You know, I teach communications or speech class. So I'm encouraging them to think critically. I'm encouraging them to think creatively. Be entertaining when you get up in front of people. Because if you're not, nobody's going to want to listen to you. You know, create that buy-in. And I say, well, you can almost go anywhere starting a speech, right? You can start talking about, you know, your dog that you had, you know, when you was 5. But if you can relate it back, if you can link it back to whatever it is that you're trying to present, it works. You know, so I'm pushing them to really push the boundaries, and I don't get to do that in most classes, right? In math, you know, the solution is what the solution is, right? You know, there's maybe a little bit more leeway in science and in ELA and that kind of stuff. So for me, it's always about, you know, I want to put my people in position to be successful by giving them all the tools that they need, and then I'm gonna let you run with it. I am not going to sit up here and give you every single step, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It, of course, context matters. But I think when people are able to think for themselves and they learn how to do that, they can be way more successful even beyond whatever the relationship is with you. Because I only got you for one semester. You know, so hopefully I'm giving you skills that you can use outside of my classroom, outside of high school, and in your daily life.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said about communication as it pertains to leadership, because you may be a leader that is upfront hard on people, but you mean well. You know, I think I've seen that a lot, not just in my life. I've seen leaders who are, you know, they might be a little bit harder on individuals, which is a tough racket, just because people remember, you know, like coaches. I think a good example is like different athletic coaches who may be hard, tough on players in practice or in games in order to get the best out of them. But it's a slippery slope, because sometimes you might just work that athlete until they don't want to be part of that team. Right. And leadership style is definitely something you got to consider just when you're trying to get the best out of people, because it's like, I want this, how am I going to get this? Okay, well, this way might be the easiest up front in the front of my mind, but is it the best way for this person? People respond differently.
You have to be adaptable.
Yes.
If you're a leader that only does things one way, like look at Greg Popovich, right? That's the first person I think of. His teams have won so many different ways because he goes, okay, what do I have? Okay, I got a point guard that's really fast. Okay, let's change things up. Okay, I got Tim Duncan and I got David Robinson. I got these real tall athletic guys. Okay, let me win that way. So if you're a good leader, I think you have to adjust to the talent that you have or the situation. Okay, if I'm coaching, you know, because I coach softball and basketball, if I'm coaching somebody does not play basketball, this is their first time playing, they've never played organized basketball, I have to coach that person differently than somebody who's been hooping all their life. You know, I can push that person in a totally different way because they understand the game on a different level. This person barely know how to dribble, right? I got to handle that person differently. If as a coach, you are not willing to be versatile in that way, I'm not going to say that you can't be successful, because there's plenty of coaches that do it one way. This is how we do things. This is how I do, you know, and whatever. But I don't think that you're going to get the most that you can out of the people that you have if you're not able to be versatile in the way that you lead and communicate and you know, kind of update your practices with, you know, who you have. Because if you've been coaching for even 10 years, it's a different generation than 10 years ago. Like, I'm 33 years old. Like, the people who are 23 think totally different than I do. So you have to be able to adjust. And when we're talking about leading other people.
Yeah, I think, wow. Yeah, leadership styles. I mean, there's so many different examples you could give for that, you know, from that. I liked your example of a beginner versus somebody who's been in the space a little bit longer, right? I like that example because that I relate to that because if I'm training with people in the gym, like many a times have I gone with other Knights personnel to the gym and I mm-hmm. walk them through stuff that I've done I've worked out with our Rocket League coach, right? And he has a powerlifting and distance running background. And
so he knows his training.
Yeah, so his training style is completely different than one of our older one of our other Rocket League influencers who was a streamer, and he followed mainly a bodybuilding style training leading up to that point, right? And bringing them both together, first off, we all worked out at the same time, so there's constantly like, wait, what are we doing? We're doing this and that. So I had to switch my speech to accompany two different skill sets, right? Like, I mean, you know, okay, in D&D terms, it's like I'm with a paladin, I'm with an assassin, right? And we still have to go in and complete this quest. Or it's like it being in you've got like a Navy SEAL and a Green Beret, and the Navy SEALs are mainly deal with aquatic combat, where they've done a lot of like this squad has done a lot of missions on oil rigs in like rainstorms. But then you get some of these Green Berets, and they've run a lot of missions in the deserts, right? And you have to bring those two groups of people together to, you know, facilitate a mission in a rainforest, right? So it's just like constantly like juggling different factors. Yeah. No, but
that's where that communication is important, man.
Yeah. I think this goes back to communication and adaptability, just like you were discussing. Yeah.
Yeah. Man, okay. So you've brought up gaming and your team and pretty much running, you know, the Pittsburgh Knights. So I think it's clearly time to jump into that so you can kind of dive completely in. So that's going to push us to our next number here. And so on average, and I just pulled this off of Google, you know, this is my internet research. It says professional gamers earn between $1,000 and $5,000 per month. I know that can probably go higher and much, much lower. You got people gaming professionally who probably don't win much money. So that's just going to move us into gaming and esports. You kind of talked a little bit about how you got into it, but what was the experience or conversation that kind of got you hooked up with the Knights and kind of got you into this part of the company?
Oh man, this is a really cool story. So while I was approaching the graduation and I was looking, I already knew I wanted to be in esports and gaming because of my experience bringing people together at my school. And I was looking into esports organizations, what I want to work on, you know, what I want to work in an esports organization or a team, or what I want to work with developers, where would I want to go? And I found out that we had an esports team in Pittsburgh. And first off, I didn't care about the salary. I didn't care about that because I was like, well, you know, I already know that my overall monthly expenses are relatively low. I could go anywhere if I needed to. I knew my parents would be okay with me going anywhere if they knew that I was passionate about it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I'm going to put so much effort into being unique and showing my authentic self to whoever is going to look at my application and my materials that I send over. So I found out that they were based in the North Shore. And if you know anything about Pittsburgh, in the North Shore is where all of the sports stadiums are, with the exception of the hockey stadium. And it's got the bigger sports stadiums such as the Pirate Stadium and Heinz Field, now Acrisure Stadium, where it hosts the Steelers and the Pirates. So you've got the football and the baseball, and you've got all the bars right there and a bunch of different hotels and stuff there. So I knew where their mailing address was. I got together this packet of materials. Now, in the packet, I put my resume, my cover letter, a white paper that I had written, and I found out that James O'Connor was married. So I was like, okay, he probably has kids. So I'm going to put a bunch of University of Pittsburgh face masks on there. And I addressed him in the letter and I said, listen, I would love to come work for you. And the gist of it was like, I'd love to come work for you. I have this variety of skill sets. I've worked with these companies in the past. Please utilize these face masks for your family. You can feel free to reach me at this email address, this phone number. It was my personal cell phone number. And I made it so personalized. So I had my packet. I still could get around the bus system with my university ID. So I went down, I cleared out an afternoon, and I went down, and it was in the same building as the Steelers. Right. So I had to go through security and say, hey, you know, I have mail for the Pittsburgh Knights. And they're like, oh, yeah, here, over here. Their offices were closed. Now, I was like, oh, no. I talked to some people at the Steelers and they were like, well, they still pick up their mail. I can give it to James and I can just put it in their mailbox. And I was like, yes. So I very carefully handed over the packet that had my future in it, that I had rewritten every document in there. I had rewritten 5 times. I had taken my resume and I had gone to 3 different friends who had graphic design experience. I went to a bunch of other friends who were in the English department, and I had them help me rewrite my cover letter and stuff like that.
Yeah, flip this for me.
Exactly. And I asked for so much help, and I made sure it was my authentic self. And it was me at the end of the day. And I carefully handed it over to her and she put it in the mailbox and she was like, all right, get out of here. And I was like, okay. And I was like flustered, right? Cause I'm like my entire future is in the balance right now. And I was gearing up for finals. My lease was going to be ending pretty soon. There was so much hanging in the balance, right? And I think it's just because of
something.
So I know there's so much positive there, but there at the also while I was nervous, there was so much positive energy going into it. This was something that I was passionate about because I understand how good and genuine gaming is for creating friend groups, for providing futures. I've worked with, we can get into some of our other stuff, but I've worked with helping get kids off the streets with gaming. You think what? Like with gaming, and we can get more into that. But I know how good this space is for people. And it was something I was just so passionate about. And I got an email from the Knights, and they were like, hey, you know, we'd love to talk. And I was just like, I remember because I was on my phone. And the email was taking longer to load because I was going down the steps at the University of Pittsburgh. There's this big tower called the Cathedral of Learning, and we just call it Cathy for short. But when you're going down the elevator, sometimes your internet connection gets fuzzy. So I'm like, it's not loading, and I like quick sprint outside. I'm like, oh my god, it loaded! people are like, what is it? But I was reading it, and then my first conversation I had with them, I remember because I went into a computer lab and I took the 2 laptop screens behind me and I put the Knights logo up, and I was just like, I was gung ho, just everything about the Knights. I came with ideas about like everything. And it's because of that level of preparation and the passion and also just because I believed in it so much. And I attack everything. Every task I do or every company that I'm talking to with this role, I do it because I believe in it. And I think that's really helped me in so many aspects. So that was really my entrance that's how I got my start into the professional side of esports and gaming, because I just did not want anything to stop me. And I had one goal in mind, and that's to be a part of a team that I truly believed in, that was there and would allow me to bring my skill set to a new team and help me further bring gaming to more people and help more people. Right. So that's my long-winded way of saying that's how I got my start in esports and gaming from a professional side. Yeah.
So what was the first day like? You go in into the office, I guess.
It was okay. So
during 2020. So
yeah. So we were
what was
virtual.
The first day of work.
Oh my God. Now here's the thing. I started working before I actually walked at my graduation. So I was like, wow. Yeah, I was in my apartment and I had just gotten my new internet all set up and everything like that. So the first day was awesome. It was just onboarding and meeting the team and being a part. And that first week, I also was a part of the big first, like all hands on deck meeting that we had. And I got to be a part of everything. And for that first 2 or 3 weeks, I kept my webcam on, and it was my laptop was so old because it was from 2015. And it was so hot at the end of every workday that I was just like, I would take it and I'd put it like on my bed and I like kind of like wave it a little bit just because like it was just handling so many different like calls and new software and all that. And so yeah, that first day and that first week was just it was just so much fun because first off, I'm just coming in and I'm bright shining face, ready to go, and everyone's just like, all right, come on, let's get started. And it was just like,
check out the new guy over here.
They're like, look at this guy. So the first day was so much fun. It was so much fun. And like I go into each week, like all the we always have morning meetings, but I really haven't slowed down as far as excitement for my day. That hasn't stopped, right? I'm working with a team now, which is just, you know, I'm working with all the same people that were at a higher level than me before. So if I'm able to bring the skills that I've learned and to these people who have been in the space longer than me in the competitive side, in the tournament management side, and, you know, it enables me to be so excited every day. I always tell people there's never a dull moment because that is the only way I can describe going to work in esports at a team I really enjoy, where there's constantly headlines of the next tournament that had these crazy events, this current, you know, player transfers, you know, big tournaments announced with companies you've never even knew would want to get into esports and gaming. It's just like, oh, I didn't see that connection before, but now I see it. And it's exactly. So that level of excitement is something that I experienced on my first day, and it's never really stopped. Right. And I don't know. Right. I don't know anybody else that attacks their work with that same level of excitement. I challenge anyone. Right. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sorry.
don't be that guy. Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. No, it's okay. I just realized that's how
this
I'm sounding.
Good,
like, yeah.
I like this because people who bring that energy, I think the old heads, right, the people who've been in whatever industry for a while, they're like, okay, let's see if you feel this way, you know, in 2 months, in 6 months, in a year, 2 years. And so I'm kind of that way as well, right? It's always like, man, like this guy, but I've been at my school now for 5 years and I'm still bringing that same level of energy and authenticity. So I'm really connecting here on, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Good,
so
I'm glad.
How do you feel like that has served you over the time that you've been there? Like, have people gone like, dang, like this is really who he is. It wasn't just the new guy coming in, you know, you're fresh, you know, so how do you feel like that has served you throughout your journey, you know, with the Knights?
I think there was a fair amount of people who didn't really know where to place me. They didn't know if they would like me. They didn't know if they wanted me to stay, you know, and that comes with every company, right? And slowly I was, over the course of a lot of that, I was able to earn my stripes in doing different tasks or facing certain challenges or on different levels of the overall night's experience, right? Where it's like I'm working several different projects, or I'm helping do recap presentations for a partner that I wasn't necessarily in discussions with, or I'm helping with the in-person stuff when that's not my field, you know? And I think that really was able to give me brownie points with just everybody in the organization.
This guy's putting in the work.
That helped them to understand, okay, it's not just some young guy who's like spazzy and just is happy to be here. It's, okay, he's a motivated individual who wants to be a part of the space in any way that he knows how and is willing to be in those situations where he's wrong, or he's willing to, you know, overcome certain hurdles in order to stay and to climb, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's helped me to really just understand the challenges that are in the space, and it's really allowed me to further work with very advanced people at the company. I'm really excited. Like
what's one of those hurdles?
I think one of the hurdles was definitely time management when in regards to projects or contacts at different companies. So understanding at what level of concern you should have for different projects and what is the most, you know, what timelines are converging on what, and what internal things versus what external things you need to put your time towards, right? There might be some people at certain companies that you're talking to that expect a very prompt answer day of or in the next 4 to 8 hours. And there may be some people that you can have on speed dial and you can just text them back and forth and say, hey, like, let's just move our meeting and I have the stuff ready for you. It's just, let's do it tomorrow instead. You know? So like there is
what's urgent and what's not.
Exactly. And approach it. But on the base level, I think approaching every single one with the upfront, prompt, on time and prepared mentality is always the best way to go. And that was not to say that I show up to every meeting late, unprepared, this and that. It's just that what I found was that when I did what I thought was a very good level of preparation before every meeting, whether it's external or internal, that always served me best going into whatever situation I was going to be in. You know, whether it's like an introductory call with a company that we want to work with, but they aren't convinced of this yet. Well, I can see that your current ad spend, you know, this is what your CPM is. And I can see, you know, with the new products that you have in line, this is how we could fit this in. You know, when it's going into certain conversations, how can your industry help to benefit gamers and esports enthusiasts as a whole, therefore creating an audience in this space where they exist at a higher income bracket and also they're incredibly loyal? And how does that benefit you? Okay, well, I can tell you how this is going to benefit them, which in turn is going to benefit you, right? So it's approaching each level with as much preparation and positivity as you can. And that's probably where I'd put a lot of my, okay, well, you know, what hurdles have you had to overcome? That's the level at which I am now sitting at.
One of the questions on where I found you is you talk about scouting top talent, right? Because there's a ton of people out there that play video games. So are you scouting the people who actually play games, or are you scouting people to come like work on the marketing side and the business side, or maybe that could be both? So like, what's the difference if you do scout both?
So that's a really good question. When it's in terms of talent and like professional talent or influencer talent, that's a separate team that takes care of it, and I work with them. You know, when 'cause a part of every campaign that we do, we're going to bring in like the influencers and the esports teams in. And one thing that I've learned from them is that when you're scouting out esports talent and professional like influencer talent, you're going to look at like a combination of three things. One, of course, the overall skill at the gaming title in question. That's always going to be one of the top situations, because you might want to look at, you're going to look at it as, okay, as a professional organization, I want to win championships. And if I'm not going to win championships, I want to be as threatening to other teams so that I'm in the top discussions. I'm in the top fives, the top tens, right? That's the first thing we look at, the skill at the title in question. Number two, overall social following. Because your fans are going to be our fans, we hope, right? So the overall social following, are they bots? Are they engaged users? And then number three is going to be, okay, what kind of personality do they have in game and in interviews, right? We want somebody who's going to emulate our brand and our values versus someone who might be a little insanely controversial for some of this, for some of the like out of pocket things they might say on stream. They might go crazy on interviews and trash talk a little too hard. Like that, right. those are some of the things that we look at. And then we find ways to incorporate them into those are the three things that we primarily will look at when bringing on new talent and professional athletes. But at the base level, when recruiting in certain areas, we want to look at the relationships we have with the developers of those games, because the developers in esports act as the governing bodies, because esports is an amalgamation of many, many different gaming titles. That's what makes it so different, because it's one organization owns several different teams that compete in several different titles. How I like to phrase it for people, it's as if an esports organization such as the Knights on the professional team side, we have a roster of four different teams currently that might grow or that might decrease, but it's as if one organization owns a soccer team, a hockey team, a football team, right? Because they're competing in so many different games. And one of the ways that you want to do that is when you're making that decision, you want to find out what goals you have as an organization. And number two, what relationships do you want to develop with those developers or what you want to create with those developers and what goals you want to accomplish there? Because it was not, I'll give you an example. It wasn't really advantageous for us to have a Valorant team, because what Riot Games wanted us to do was they wanted us to run the entirety of the North American Valorant Challengers League, right? And we wouldn't be able to do that if we had a Valorant team that we competed in, right? So that's what caused us to disband our Valorant team, because it didn't make sense for us to have that at any time. And that those goals and those teams and your current or your future roster is something that is constantly being managed by esports teams, right? It's constantly assessing what makes this most sense for us. What kind of visibility do we want for our organization in what audience group? And that's going to depend on like what games you're competing in. So that kind of gives you a frame of reference from when we recruit. And then as far as like on the staff side, when we recruit based off of talent and skill set. And that has allowed us to work with people all over the world. You know, people get shocked when I say, yeah, we have staff. I always go back and forth with our guys in Honduras and in Mexico and in Croatia and in India. Wow. And in exactly. Right. So it's like, and in Canada, right. So like we're all over the place, because we don't restrict ourselves to just geographic. And we're a company that is a perfect example of how well an organization, a lean team, is able to exist
more
and
agile.
Flourish. Exist, be agile in a virtual environment, you know? So that gives you a little bit about kind of recruiting in esports overall.
Okay, so if we go on your, I think it was Instagram or Facebook or something, and you guys are affiliated with all of these cool, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Pirates and Penguins and Wiz Khalifa. So just before we get to our three whats, like, tell us about some of those experiences. I know y'all just did an auto show where y'all kind of basically had like a pop-up Gaming shop, gaming zone.
That was, yeah. So as far as working with the Steelers and the Penguins and like Wiz and his Taylor gang, first off, like it's enough to just say that you're there and that you work with those people. But when you show up to the function and security and staff are waving in your car and telling you, okay, go to that person and that person's going to escort you into the stadium, and then we have all your stuff already set up, or you show up with the stuff that you have to set up and they're like, okay, yeah, come on, we'll help you. That's just a different level, and it really puts into perspective how gaming applies to everyone, right? And one example that we'll talk about the auto show, but one of the examples I like to do is we work with the Pirates, and now we're going to be doing we're going to do four of these this year, but we did a Rocket League tournament at the Pirates Stadium, the Jim Beam left field luxury lounge, right before the Marlins game. And we literally, we held the tournament, and it was parents going against kids, kids going against like other kids. And we had Jason Grilley, who was a former Pirates legend, and he was there, and he was doing pictures with our Rocket League team, which was like, your mind goes insane when you look at first off, Jason Grilley, that guy is a massive human being, right? Because you go to shake his hand, he's like, hey man, what's up? And when you shake his hand, you have to go up. You have to go up because he's already coming down like this. So I'm just like, yeah, you're going to put power behind it. And so he's taking pictures with the one student who won the Rocket League tournament. And in the picture is also our founder and CEO. James was in the picture too. And I'm just watching all this happen. And I'm like, oh my God. Oh, wow. And then I just see the doors open up and they're like, all right, anybody who wants to go into the game, you know, you can go. And then you just naturally flow out and you go and watch the professional baseball game. Yeah. And that's one of the things that really changed it up for not only me, but also for all the people that were present there, because the people that were participating there, because they were constantly asking questions about esports and gaming overall, because their kids were going in and competing, and you got to see the mentality and the wheels turn in their head, because everybody grows up hearing the same thing. Okay, well, it's fun that you want to play video games, but you're going to have to settle down into something later on.
But a real job.
A real job, right? But we have to create these experiences that convince the parents that, hey, they don't have to give this up. And if they can, just like with anything else, they can work and they can push and they can experience these levels of success through normal success metrics that you might see, you know, the travel to a certain higher level convention, the income, right? These things that people usually will judge.
Losses.
Yeah, they'll judge success based off of these things. And those successes are achievable in gaming and esports, right? And seeing people's mentality switch to understanding that that's possible, that is... It's like seeing a baby smile for the first time, like every time I see it, right? And then going back to like the auto show, we do stuff locally to just so we can showcase to people that yes, esports and gaming is here to stay, and you're gonna see it. Okay, you're gonna see it. So we recently had the race car that we had next to our gaming activation. So that's twofold, right? We've had a car for I think past like 2 years. It's just changed, right? It's just changed. Like first, once it was a Mini Cooper, then it was that race car that we had at Mini the auto Cooper. Show. Yeah, we had a Mini Cooper once. And what we always do is we always have the ability to game out of the car. So we'll open up the trunk and people can just sit down. We always keep like our nicer like gaming chairs. It has like all of our insignias on it and everything. We keep that in there. Mm-hmm. And we keep a monitor and an Xbox in there, Xbox Series X. And people can game in Rocket League out of the Rocket League car, right? That's one of the reasons that we had that race car there, was because not only did we wrap it in those colors because it looked like a Rocket League car, it also is used for off-road racing, in Mexico, which was insane. I got to drive it, and that thing is insane. It's so loud. It's like, I felt like Ghost Rider. It was awesome. So then we have what you guys might have seen on Instagram was the just the tables and tables and Xboxes and monitors. It's like, what is this? That is our gaming setup, which is scalable at a bunch of different sizes, depending on how big the venue is. And it allows everybody to come in and game at any age or any level, because we offer family-friendly titles, like when we're doing that activation, and we keep it stacked with family-friendly, relevant games to every audience. At that time, we had Rocket League, the newest Madden, and the newest Forza. So I would see these families come in, and it was just constantly packed. The event itself, the auto show itself, was constantly packed, and our venue was also packed, which was awesome. Because it was awesome for a couple of reasons. My favorite reason because it was awesome was because, again, I got to see the mentality of parents change when they got to game with their kids. They got to ask me questions, and they got to experience what, like, okay, this is a thing. Esports is a thing. Yeah, this is so real. Crazy. Yeah. I always tell my kids, like, get off the game. And I'm like, well, you know, this is why they could be a part of that game for a little bit longer, right? And this is why. And seeing some of the kids, like, run up to me, and they're just like, do I have to pay? What? How much does this cost? I'm like, it doesn't cost anything. And their eyes literally just explode. And they sprint back to their parents. They're like, you don't have to pay anything. Like, and I'm just like, yeah, exactly. And then the parents come over, and then we get to talking. And it's just those happy moments, as cheesy as it sounds, like, that's one of my favorite things about this. You know, we were at the Rocket League championship series over in Texas. And we ran a sweepstakes where these two twin brothers ended up winning. And they got to bring their family down, and you saw people attending that were of all different ages, right? And that was another thing where I was able to see the mentality shift, right? So I think it's so awesome, and it's just so mind-blowing to be able to work with these larger-than-life brands and to take part in these in-person, like, activations, like with the Steelers and Pirates, and you know, when you get to go into the fan meet and greet with Wiz Khalifa just because you're with the Knights, like, it's just like I just didn't know what to say. Like, I got to meet Wiz, and I just didn't know what to say to him before the guy took the picture, and I was like, what did I say? I said, oh, you know, the first time I heard your music was this song. He's like, man, that's a good song. And I was just like, yeah. because it was the last stop on his tour was here in Pittsburgh, obviously. And I see his family is all around us. And I was just like, that was awesome. So a lot more cool stuff to come. Dude, he's like, okay, whatever Wikipedia says, I'm like 6 foot. That guy's like 6'5", okay? And I know this because
tall, like, when
he was, yeah, and his security is even larger. I was like, I thought, I almost like backed into a wall, and I'm like, oh, that's a person. Okay. it's like, oh my God, you know? And it's even crazier when you see like Steelers players at the party. And they're just like, yeah, you know, whatever. I'm like, Jesus, like, that's a massive human being over there, you know. So it's you get to roll with these big dogs, and they always hang with big dogs.
I was looking at my notes here, and I think this is something as quickly or as long as you want to go on this. Something I think needs to be addressed. I don't know, address makes it sound like it's, you know, some big huge thing, but. How do you all deal with, like, the mental and the physical health side of, you know, the gaming community? Because, you know, there's something to be said for, you know, people, you're in the house all day, they're sitting, they're not getting active. And then the mental side of it, you know, the grinding, the pressure, you know, the highest stakes games. So how do y'all kind of deal with that with your own team?
So at the baseline level, our entire upper leadership is comprised of competitive veterans that had to overcome the unhealthy habits from a lifetime of competing at the highest levels when esports was not a career, when you didn't get paid, when you were shacked up in a one-bedroom hotel room with 10 of your friends, and you could only afford to have the hotel room because you had to pull your money together. So, and then those guys went on to get MBAs, and those guys went on to go get college educations, be in the military, and then come back to establish an organization. So that's those are the people that are leading our organization. When they go forward and they're discussing with our talent and our athletes, we have baseline levels that we're going to establish when you come onto the organization. And that's going to be measuring, making sure that, you know, there's, you're going to, like our Rocket League coach, I always go back to him because he was telling me about this firsthand. He was like, okay, we're going to practice from this time to this time. And then we're going to do a match analysis afterwards with this. And then you guys are going to leave your houses and go do something for this amount of time. And then you're going to come back and then we're going to like discuss and then we're going to do some more match analysis of other teams because we have a match against these guys next week. And it doesn't always have to like that intervention was scheduling and making sure that the athletes were getting to a good standing of balance and developing the healthy habit of balance. Right. And that's a conversation that needs to be held across the board, because what we're seeing in other, I mean, you know, you just said this yourself, you know, the burnout is something that can exist because one, it's a sedentary occupation, right? You're engaging with blue light and blue screens and going a lot longer than somebody who's just working in an office job would go, because what you have to do is you don't just have to practice yourself. You have to actively run scrimmages and practice with your teammates, and you have to, it's working your communication mentally. It's draining, right? So you are at risk of feeling left burnt out if you don't manage the healthy habits that you need to manage, right? So then we go from there and we make sure that there's the balance that's there, right? Because at the intervention of nutrition and sleep and exercise, the performance in esports and gaming is positively impacted. It is. We've looked, I mean, you know, one of the studies that I always pull from is a study that came from Germany, and I believe it was around 2018 or 2019. And what they were talking about is that, okay, they would game for 5 hours, but they'd work out for an hour. And this left the players not only being very well, well taken care of as far as from a skills level in the game, but they also were from a health makeup, they were very driven to go again, and they were ready because they felt that it positively impacted their performance. And it also did, when you look at the numbers. I mean, this is a virtual environment, technology is a huge part of it. You're going to be looking at your performance levels. It did help with their aim and it did help with their performance in the game, right? But if it did help or it felt like it helped, those are two different things. So you got to make sure that they're also feeling the positive impact there, you know. And the health and wellness discussion is something that is already a part of the esports conversation, but right. When you on the professional side, but when you get into the collegiate, when you get into the high school leagues, and when you get into gaming as a culture overall, health and wellness is not a discussion. And that's something that we're trying to change, and I think it's something that needs to change, because what I'm seeing is when these gamers and gym rats and fitness enthusiasts, they're already hanging out in the same social circles. They're playing games they're playing the same games. They're consuming the same content. They're, you know, Baki. Everybody watches Baki, you know, whether you're a lifter or you're a gamer, right? And but there's no movement unifying these already very close groups of people.
Right.
And that's something that we're looking to change. And I think that's something that we should definitely look at as we progress in this industry. right? So that's how important I feel that the health and wellness discussion is from at least our team's angle, and also just esports and gaming overall. One hack I do is whenever I'm gaming here, I use this. This is one of those like smaller under desk treadmills, and I'll just walk while I'm gaming. You know, that's something I recommend to everybody.
All right. Sometimes I'll do squats. I'm not going to buy a treadmill.
Oh yeah. It's either squats or like at a loading screen, you could do a plank and you could really admire right, how long the loading screen is. So, you know, if it's cutting season, play Skyrim, because those loading screens,
off the charts. All right. Let's get into our three what's. I ask every guest this when they come on. You can go as long or as short as you would like. This is already my longest episode ever, which is totally fine. All right. What number one? What's an opinion that you have that will be considered unpopular?
All right. Now let me think about this for a second. I think that an unpopular opinion I have is that I think that your habits and focusing on what you can control versus worrying about things that you can't control is a much healthier way to approach your daily life. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's not very popular because it is very popular for people to have anxieties and to worry about things that they cannot control or things that have not yet already come. And I think that sometimes, unfortunately, people are looking for reasons to worry and they're looking for reasons to, you know, stress over things. So I think that's my controversial opinion, that your habits and focusing on things that you can control versus worrying about things that you can't is one of the best ways you can attack the day and one of the best ways to lead your life.
Okay. Fair enough. What number two? If you weren't in esports, what would you be doing?
I think if I wasn't in esports.
Because you do have an MBA.
That's one of the things that I wanted to correct you at the beginning, but we just started talking. I received my undergrad over at the University of Pittsburgh, but I do have plans to go. I have plans to go after my MBA probably at Pitt, but I have not gone to that level just yet. But I think if I wasn't in esports, I think I would be in some other, I think I'd be working in brand management and be working on the agency side, helping to tell the story of how that brand is is helping people, right? And whether that's going to be on I think that would take a very like Hollywood approach. It's like, okay, like image consultancy, I think is where I would gravitate towards, just because that helps people develop lifelong habits so that they can positively change their life and help the people around them. So I think I'd probably gravitate towards image consultancy, that kind of private agency practice where I'm helping people achieve a new level in their lives, right? Not life coaching, because I feel like life coaches, I don't know if life coaches really do anything. I'm not sure.
Oh, don't get me started. Yeah.
Yes. Well, you know, when I first saw your email, I was just like, oh, it's Tony Robbins. No, I'm just kidding. I was like, what is he? Oh, it's Anthony. Oh, okay. Oh, way better.
Okay. Wow. We got life coach Liam here.
Hey, listen.
Trying to get people's lives better.
All right, listen, Robbins. Okay. That was okay.
All right. Last what? And I think you can speak to this directly because you deal with, you know, kids and the gaming and esports all the time. What advice would you give to someone in high school, like somebody about to graduate?
I would take inventory of your current skill set and look at not look at college as the be all end all of everything. And I would, and going back to the first point of the skill set, I would take inventory of your current skill set and look at how you can grow that in different ways, right? And you look on the money side, it's like, okay, like I think it is good to work a summer job, but you should look to increase your skill set in ways while you are there, right? And I think that, you know, whether it's listening to different informational podcasts and doing research on your phone while you're stacking the shelves on and learning about things that interest you, you know, whether it's going after, this is a big one right now, going after free certifications and developing your skill set in grassroots level marketing, or whether if gaming is your, I was just talking about this to some people, whether if gaming is your interest, right? You can utilize Eventbrite and local events marketing. You can go to the Reddit of your geography, and you can start to create gaming events that will further bring together more people in not only your area, but in your area that have the same interests as you, right? Mm. So if you're graduating high school, what I recommend is take inventory of your skill set and expand it in every cost-effective way that you can imagine, because when you seek to improve yourself in mind and body, that's when you're going to experience a lot of positive hurdles that you're going to have to overcome. So that's some advice I'd give, and that's also just advice I'd give to my younger self as well. Because when I was graduating high school, I would have loved to have, you know, been a part of that. You know, if I had like gone into that direction. So that's the advice I'd give.
Okay, now Liam, tell everybody where they can find you and how they can follow the Knights Gaming team.
Yeah, I think the best way to follow us is to go on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, and the YouTube, because we have the handle of Knights on most of those, or Knights Gaming. And I don't know how we swung that, but I'm also tagged in a lot of like our different social media posts. So if you like go on Instagram and you scroll down, you'll see me on there. So I think best way is just to follow the Knights. And I would also recommend you check out, if you're looking for something cool to watch, I'd recommend you either watch more episodes of Tony Rambles, or you can also check out the Challengers League that we're running in coordination with Riot Games. And you can watch that on Twitch. And I think that's probably where I tell people to go to.
Yeah. Okay, Liam, thank you, man, so much for coming on. This was amazing, and there's definitely more to follow. I have a specific game that I want to ask you about.
Yeah. Oh, is it Uncharted?
Thank you all for listening. Of course, I'll give the same 20-second appeal. Make sure you guys rate, review, 5 stars wherever you listen. Make sure you follow me on IG and TikTok. I post different stuff about me, as well as different clips from the show. Stuff that you can share out with your buddies. The Living Numbers Podcast, that's my handle on all these different places, IG, TikTok. I even have a Facebook. Merch link, you can cop hoodies, t-shirts, you know, the Living Numbers Pod Shop on Etsy. And last but not least, the behind the scenes episodes, you can find those on Apple and Spotify, where all of the stuff that I talk about before the episodes and after the episodes. There are some total gems in there. Like, there's always like pieces like in between, like that me and my guests, like me and Liam, like we reference these things because we talked about them beforehand. So if you want to get that great stuff, make sure you subscribe. I think it's like $2.99 or $3.99, something like that. That's basically a cup of coffee, okay? Just don't go to Starbucks one time and, you know, you get a bunch of extra stuff. So thank you all for listening, and I will see you in the next round. Voila, hat comes off.